Crime Action Network, and welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. A couple of weeks ago, we were out at the Civitas Institute 2017 Conservative Leadership Conference, collecting interviews from international, national, and other people in the realm of politics and policy. And today we have Ann McElhaney, known for her work on Frack Nation, here to talk about her new project, Gosnell, the book being a true crime telling of the most prolific serial killer in American history in Kermit Gosnell, the abortionist who was active in the 80s and 90s in Philadelphia and is now serving three consecutive life sentences for deaths that happened under his watch. Also, we will be talking about Anne's new movie of the same name, Gosnell, which is a dramatic telling in a feature film of the Gosnell situation starring Dean Cain. Thank you for joining us again on What Matters in North Carolina. I'm sitting here with Ann McElhaney, who's the producer of Gosnell, her most recent film, but is also very well known for her work on Frack Nation. And she also has a book by the same name of Gosnell about her movie, or about the topic about her movie. And I want to give you a chance to kind of introduce for you what this movie and book is about.
Hi there, Matt. It's great to be here. My third year at CLC. I always love being here. Gosnell is an extraordinary and awful story about a doctor, Dr. Kermit Gosnell, who is serving three life sentences in a prison in Pennsylvania right now for delivering babies alive and cutting their necks with scissors. And he's serving three life sentences for three babies that were identified. However, there is no doubt, and there was no doubt in the minds of the jury and those investigating, who combed through this extraordinary evidence and the grand jury, that in fact this is America's greatest, biggest serial killer, most prolific serial killer, that he probably in his lifetime killed thousands of babies in this way, born alive, crying, one of them trying to swim for safety in a toilet. And the descriptions are graphic and multitudinous. And then his modus operandi was that he would cut their necks with the scissors, and he did this, as I said, for over 30 years. I'd highly recommend the book. It's a New York Times bestseller now, despite the fact that the New York Times didn't want to have it on its New York Times bestselling list. You'll find it actually in the true crime section in bookstores, because this is a true crime story, and actually one of the worst crime stories in American history. And an added interesting detail that I think a lot of your audience would understand and appreciate, and not in a good way, is that the media chose not to report on this story, despite the fact that this story has all the elements of things that the progressive movement say they care about. You know, there is the death of Karnemaya Monger, a Bhutanese refugee who spent 20 years in a refugee camp in Nepal, came to America and was dead 4 months after she got here, after a botched abortion at Dr. Kermit Gosnell's clinic. And the progressive movement didn't think that was worth reporting on. Samika Shaw died in 2000, a young African-American woman, a mother, and she also died in a similar fashion. And no one seems to care. The progressive movement don't seem to care. It's amazing, actually. Philadelphia is a sanctuary city. A sanctuary city that did not give much sanctuary to Karnemaya Monger, and whose death didn't seem to bother all these progressives in Philadelphia, who claim to care so much for the very people that were the victims in this particular story. A lot of the children killed were also African-American. It's almost like a genocide, what went on here. The vast majority were African-American, and yet we're not hearing Black Lives Matters having much to say about those Black lives. So there's a lot to know here. I'd highly recommend the book. It's an extraordinary page turner. That's what people have told us. We have, you know, interviews with all of the lead investigators. We have interviews with some of the victims. We have interviews with people who worked in the clinic who also spent time in prison. And we have a lot of information from the trial itself and from the grand jury investigation. And I think it's really important that people read this book, because what we don't know will actually hurt us.
Right. And it's such a hard topic to even wrap your brain around, in this idea that this is going on, the scope of it, and it happening, you know, in America, in Philadelphia, for all this time. I think that it's really hard to believe. So the fact that it's in the true crime section is really a good thing. It's even for me. I mean, I personally am a father of a daughter who's just over a year old, And it is mind-boggling to me personally, and I'm sure so many people, that this is happening. So when was Gosnell active? Like, what time periods? Like, when was he stopped and that sort of thing?
So he went to prison, you know, just a couple of years ago, but he operated for the 30 years previous to that. So, you know, he was operating this clinic in broad daylight. You know, it was murder in plain sight. It's kind of extraordinary, you know, that this happened. I mean, he went to prison in 2014, and you know, it's just amazing. It's amazing that he got away with this for so long, and that's one of the things that we really highlight in the book. I mean, one of the really extraordinary, you know, there's an extraordinary number of extraordinary facts, but one of the most extraordinary of all of them is the fact that the Department of Health didn't examine the clinic for 17 years, even though Samika Shaw died, even though Karnamaya Monger died. And, you know, you have to ask, and this was asked in the grand jury by one of the ADAs, Assistant District Attorney Christine Wexler, you know, what exactly had to happen in that clinic for the Department of Health in Harrisburg to care? So, you know, it wasn't like people weren't making complaints. There were, you know, huge number of complaints, including doctors at local area hospitals who had written handwritten complaints to the Department of Health. But, you know, even putting that aside, and there were an enormous number of complaints and lawsuits that were settled by the state, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Despite all of that, the idea that two people died and that bureaucrats in Harrisburg, bureaucrats, by the way, in the Department of Health, many of them nurses, by the way, many of them with medical backgrounds, that they didn't feel motivated to get into their cars and drive and find out what was going on. You know, in one case, during one of the most, you know, one of the most graphic and most serious complaints, the only action that was done by Harrisburg was to meet Gosnell off campus. To meet him in King of Prussia, some people would know it's an area outside of Philadelphia. You know, they allowed him to be met off campus to explain himself. He, of course, is a great fabulist and a great storyteller and charming, and he charmed them, and they let it go, and that was the end of that. And they were satisfied with his answers, and they moved on. And as I said, the two women died. But also the bodies were literally piling up in the basement. And they were literally piling up in the basement. And what's amazing, and I suppose what's in the midst of all this darkness, there is light in this story, by the way. And that light comes in the shape of Detective Jim Wood, you know, a regular cop, you know, Philadelphia cop, exactly what that conjures up in your brain, you know, from a large family, Catholic, just a really good guy who is not a homicide detective. He is actually he's on the drug task force with the DA's office. And it took him to care for Karnamaya Monger's death and to pursue the investigation into her death and to not allow this to be swept under the carpet. It's only because of him that Gosnell is in prison. So I highly recommend the book. It was very tough writing it. I mean, I cried many times at the computer just recounting the stories, particularly the story of baby boy A. You know, extraordinary, born in 2008 on the 12th of July and shares a birthday with my own father. He lived and died, obviously, on the same day, but he did live. And he had such an effect on the workers that three of them took a photograph of him. And that photograph eventually nailed Gosnell's fate and eventually made sure that he went to prison. But baby boy A, despite his very short life, I think could have a massive impact in America and around the world because he struggled for life. And as I said, he had such an impact on the workers that they took these photographs. And Adrian Moten, one of the workers who took the photograph, who I've interviewed, you know, she kept the phone. You know, the way you get a phone and then the phone gets old and you throw it out or whatever. No, she never threw it out. She kept the phone. And when the cops eventually caught up with her, she handed the phone over and said, "You're going to want to watch that. You're going to have a look. There's a photograph there." And her remark after that was, "Now I'm free. Now finally I'm free." That she had kept the photograph for all those years and that it had haunted her, actually. And she went to prison and, in fact, says that the worst part about being in prison was the dark, because she would see baby boy A. And the minute they turned the lights out, he would appear to her and that she would say, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry."
That's powerful there. I mean, so when did you start the projects, the book and the movie? When did you start those projects?
You know, it's an amazing story. I mean, we had done a documentary, as you mentioned earlier, called Frack Nation, about the fracking miracle that's happening across America, and particularly in Pennsylvania, which is kind of the heart of the kind of ground zero for a lot of the controversy connected with false controversy, by the way, connected with fracking, based on a documentary by Josh Fox called Gasland. And, you know, we had made this documentary called Frack Nation, and Phelan, my husband, who is at front of camera and the presenter of the documentary, was traveling around the country having screenings, talking to people, and he was on a kind of a tour of Pennsylvania and by accident ended up in Philadelphia. I mean, a lot of people that listen to your show, I'm sure, are religious folk and will probably see the hand of God in that, and I certainly do. And Phelan was there in Philadelphia very, very accidentally, very strangely, and had a couple of days that he didn't have anything to do, and he heard about a local crime story, as it was described, a local crime story. That's how Sarah Schiff from the Washington Post, by the way, described it and explained why she hadn't covered it, by the way. So, local crime story. And Phelan went into this courtroom, which was empty, literally empty. There were very few people there, and basically only a couple of local journalists. You know, no national press was there. And he heard, and he's been a reporter for years. I mean, he worked in Northern Ireland during the war there, during the Troubles, as they call it. So he's seen a lot and heard a lot in his life. He's not, you know, he's no p-. And he sat there and saw and heard the worst things he'd ever seen or heard, the worst testimony, the worst evidence. What they did was they set up a slideshow projector, and they projected the images of the dead children in front of the jury during the trial as a way of illustrating exactly how they had died, showing the cut at the back of the necks of the babies and all of that. So he was sitting there watching that. As he says himself, the more shocking thing and the more very disturbing thing was he turned around to see these press benches, empty press benches. And because of the severity of the story, because of the extraordinary nature of these stories, they had reserved, the prosecution had reserved a particularly large courtroom in Philadelphia because they expected a massive crowd of journalists for a story with such a huge amount of newsworthy aspects to it. And, you know, and so they actually had, and we have it in the film as well, they had these notices on the benches saying reserved for journalists, and that section that was reserved for journalists, bank upon bank of chairs, was empty. Those benches were empty. And he said that was really disturbing. He came back to Los Angeles, where we live, and told us the story. And Magda, who is our other partner in the business, the other producer of this film, you know, Phelan said, we have to do something about this. And both Magda and I both said, we don't want anything to do with abortion. We do not want anything to do with abortion. We have, you know, it's not our thing. It's not our shtick. A lot of the stuff that we do, we like doing stories about environmentalists, but we have no interest in this. And Phelan said, I would just ask you, what I'm going to do is let me just buy 3 days of the court transcripts, of the transcripts that I heard when I was there. And you can purchase them. And he did. And we read them. And that was that. I mean, we were more rabid about doing this than he was after we had read the transcripts. And the idea that no one was reporting on this, we're journalists and, you know, we're proud of being journalists. And it's a responsibility and a privilege. But if you don't report the news, I mean, you don't deserve to be a journalist. So we're very happy, you know, and privileged to get to do this, despite the fact that this is an awful story.
Right. And what you said about, you know, not wanting to get near the topic of abortion is, in this day and age, is so true across the board that I mean, that's why the story wasn't covered. I'm sure that's why it didn't get that much attention, because there's so much of a fear of going near that topic. So what resistance did you run into in this project going into that topic?
It's been amazing. I mean, I remember somebody saying very, very near the beginning of it, somebody saying to me, you know, you think you've had it hard, you know, taking on environmentalists. You ain't seen nothing yet. You know, you ain't seen trouble till you go after Planned Parenthood, till you have to go after pro-abortionists, you know. And my God, is that true? I mean, we've had all kinds of things and kind of surprising things, even amongst you know, fans of ours, if you like, people who have really liked our work, who, you know, basically said, that's me, I'm done with you now, you know. We've had a fair bit of that. But we've also had you know, obviously the mainstream. For example, so the book came out in January, and within 48 hours, it sold out everywhere. It sold out in Books a Million, Barnes & Noble, and on Amazon. Like, complete gone. There were no books. And it came up. It was a complete disaster for us, obviously, because on Amazon, it came up and said, oh, you know, it'll be 6 weeks before you get your, you know, they're going to have to reprint and everything. We trended on Amazon. We were at number three in all categories of books being sold. We were number three within 48 hours. And yet we did not appear on the New York Times bestseller list at number three or four or five or six or seven or eight or anywhere on the hardback bestseller list, which we should have been by numbers. And then we discovered we are now on the bestsellers list, the New York Times bestseller list. However, what we discovered, which is kind of news and kind of funny, really, when you think about it, because people talk about fake news and how, you know, the New York Times is a fake newspaper with fake journalists telling fake stories. And here's a fake story for you. The bestseller list in the New York Times is not made up of bestsellers. And I just think that that's an interesting thing. They don't use numbers to work out what to put on the list. I know, you literally cannot make this stuff up. This is not me. This is not me reporting from The Onion right now. This is a true story. The New York Times do not use numbers, just raw data, in order to work out the bestseller list. And they wait their readers. So you're more weighty and you're more valuable if you're a reader in New York than you are if you're in Wichita. So it's just good to know. But we are on the list and it does unfortunately matter. I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, it definitely does. I mean, it sounds like there was a lot of blowback from different areas. So as far as the book and the movie, if someone's going to only see one, which we hope they would see both, but if someone's only going to see one, would you rather they read the book or watch the movie? Which do you think would have more value to them, I guess? I'm trying to word it in
That's a really hard question for me to answer. I suppose for sure the movie is much more accessible than the book. I would say that. It's much more accessible. It has a life-changing effect watching the film, and we've had that experience with people who've told us that. We believe it has already saved lives, by the way. We have had amazing testimony, people writing to us explaining the effect that this had by seeing the film. And very few people have seen it. A few hundred people across the country have seen it. We've been showing it to small audiences of sort of, you know, leaders, thought leaders, so that when the movie actually comes out in theatres, that they will tell people. So I don't like your question. People should buy the book and see the film. And they're very different, actually, funny enough. Maybe that's an important thing to say. They're very, very different. The book is forensic. The book is very detailed and very forensic, and it is very much a true crime story. A lot of testimony taken directly from the transcripts of the trial, interviews with cops, whereas the movie is a movie. It's, you know, like a Hollywood movie. Nothing happens in the movie that didn't happen in real life. But obviously in a movie, you have to concentrate and distill and edit out, you know, and we left out things. I think it's important maybe to say to your audience that we left out things that we thought were too difficult for people to watch. So there is nothing, there's no images. We don't show anything in the film. You don't see anything, because we thought that was really important. But even more than that, we don't even tell everything in the film, because, you know, in the telling of this, it's hard. And, there's no doubt about it. I've had people write and say that they've had to put the book down repeatedly and read it back up. But I would suggest that the book is very like, you know, it's like reading the Holocaust, you know, like reading stories from, you know, Mengele. Yes, it's terrible, but it's important and it happened. And it didn't happen in a backwater. It happened in progressive Pennsylvania, progressive Philadelphia. And it didn't happen, you know, in the 17th century. You know, this is the 21st century. This happened now. This happened right now. And people need to know exactly what happened. And actually, you know, it's all in the details.
Right. So my question about the Gosling movie then, is the format a documentary format? Or it is a cinematic story?
Yeah, it's a movie. It's a movie. It's directed by Nick Searcy, actually one of your own, a North Carolina native. And the lead actor is Dean Cain, who a lot of people know, young Superman. Sarah Jane Morris, you know, not a name many people might recognize, but her face people would recognize from CSI, from Criminal Minds. Really, really great actor. And as I said, Nick Searcy, who directs the film, is also acting in the film. And he would be well known and loved, obviously, here in North Carolina. And, you know, we have Michael Beach, another actor that a lot of people will recognize. Michael Beach, really wonderful actor. And we have an amazing cast. we, you know, we had very little money. We obviously did a crowdfunding campaign for this film. We raised 2.3 million from 29,000 people across the country. And people can continue to help us because we have problems trying to get this film out. So anyone who's listening who could help, just go to gosnellmovie.com. gosnellmovie.com, and you know, give us even a dollar if you believe in the importance of this story being told. And if you want to buy the book, just go to gosnellbook.com and you can buy the book there. But gosnellmovie.com, gosnellbook.com, and any help that you can give, we would be most grateful. We don't think 29,000 people should be the number of people that made this film possible. It should be 150,000 people, 250,000 people. And just give a dollar. Even if you give a dollar, it's enough. But obviously, if you can give more, we'd appreciate it.
All right, and that is a really good point to bring up, because in contrast to, you know, Frack Nation being a documentary, it's very different. I think that people who know you from Frack Nation would assume it was a documentary. So that's a really great point to make, that it is a story. It is a produced,
it's a cinematic story. Yeah, with music and with great actors and it's, you know, we've had people who've seen it have been really blown away by the production values, what we were able to do with so little money. You know, most of these, you know, most movies are, you know, $10 or $20 million. So, you know, we spent about $2 million, and you know, we're really proud of what's been achieved here.
All right. Well, I look forward to watching it. I'm going to catch it today. And
thank you.
And thank you for spending time with us. We went a little over our time, but I think it was a good time. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Thank you again to Anne McElhaney for taking the time to sit down and talk with us at What Matters in North Carolina about her new projects, Gosnell, the book, and the movie. We really appreciate her taking the time. And we look forward to talking to you again tomorrow, where we will have Susan Myrick of the Civitas Institute sitting down with Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation to talk about voter ID, voter fraud, and all things voter. Make sure you tune in for that tomorrow.